What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Serious Angler Podcast, powered by our friends over at X2 Power Batteries. We're back with the captain, Mr. Andy Full, and as always, I'm your host, Bailey Egbrett. Andy, feels like a little bit since we've had like a legitimate live show where I'm gonna knock on wood, but where everything has gone the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, let's hope everything goes the way it's supposed to. So if I have to step out for a second, I apologize. I texted you offline, but it's a never ending struggle over here with kids. So my littlest one turns one tomorrow, and I think she's about to cut a tooth through the gum. So she woke up like 25 minutes ago screaming bloody murder. So I gave her some Motrin and she's back out, and the wife has to go pick up her birthday cake. So like,
yeah.
Just never well, any middle. But
I feel that, well, you know, I miss the days where our parents were giving us whiskey at that age to cure everything.
Whiskey and beer, baby.
I remember the days because I was a horrible child. So thank God my parents are saints. Child? But I'm horrible now, but my parents don't have to deal with me. My wife has to deal with me. But like, I remember one time as a kid, I just wouldn't go to bed. My dad's like, here, try this. It was whiskey. I was out.
You got to do what you got to do.
That's right. That's right. Well, dude, I give you props because you got all you got going on with two kiddos. And I'm sitting here struggling, barely afloat. Like we're doing a show last minute. And thank God for our guests being as cool as they are, doing everything last minute, sending the invite like 10 minutes before the show even starts. So we're all discombobulated here. My soundboard, for whatever reason, as of right now, it's okay. Again, knock on wood. But it was deciding offline before the show started that it didn't want to work. So let's hope for this episode it stays on track. But, dude, I'm pumped to get back to these Tuesday Night Lives and get on some – I got an interesting strategy going forward in regard to – I shouldn't say strategy, but more plan going forward with some of our guests that I'm psyched to start tapping into some different regions, different people we've never had on the show. And with all, like, the whole pro talk, things going down, all the drama, I just want to get some – good old folks on here that love to fish, that are eat up about it, and just talk some dang fishing. And so it's going to be awesome, man. And we got some dang hammers on here from basically the other side of the country, north versus south here. We got the hammer duo from Texas, Shane Campbell and Wyatt Frankens on, which I know that we have, according to our MP3 demographic, our leading percentage of listeners on the podcast side is from Texas. So chances are the people listening to this have probably had their money taken from these two. So we'll try to get into a little bit of that and get into some good conversation from, you know, tournament strategy from a team tournament versus solo, and then also with forward facing involved. So it's going to be a pretty dang good show. But before we do, first things first, I don't know if anybody's seen it or is in social or tapped in on social, but X2 Power just launched some new power stations, some portable power stations, which, if you're like me and you're a truck camper or you just camp in general, these are the things that get you psyched, because it's the small gadgets like that that can keep, especially us podcast folk, powered up. And if you run camera gear, things like that, that keeps you rolling when you're on the road and you're not staying in an Airbnb or things like that. So I'm hyped for that drop. And if you guys want to check them out, they're x2powerbattery.com. Make sure you guys can use our code and save a little bit of money because they are a premium piece of gear. They are a little bit of a pretty penny, so you can save yourself a few bucks. But on top of that, for the folks that we have gotten to become Omnia premium members, everyone that we've gotten to sign up for to be an Omnia premium member has absolutely loved it. If you guys have not seen, as a member, you get 10% back on all your orders. So like, you order $100 worth of tackle, you get $10 back into your order to order $10 more. Now it's 20%. So that's what's pretty dang cool. 20% until the 23rd. So if you're looking to get your tackle orders in, get them in the next week, because you're going to get way more back than what you originally would be as a member just throughout the rest of the year. So they run these sneaky sales, so we make it our job to let you guys know when these things are going on.
And always pay attention to your email, because they'll let you know when it's coming.
Well, yeah, and dude, I can't tell you how many dang baits I have the email notifications on for, like, when it goes in stock, that, like, as soon as you get the alerts, it's like, order, order, order. Like, oh, it just man. Makes sure you get them when you can, get it while it's hot. But, absolutely. Like, they got those new, the new rave I've been seeing, especially with this whole, you know, hover strolling, Damiki rigging deal, the new raid, the jerk minnow, I believe it's called.
Yeah, the tail's the real big one.
Yeah, dude.
That thing looks so good.
I definitely didn't order some today.
I'm sure you didn't. I definitely did.
But those are available if you guys want to check those out. And then last night we had our fantasy fishing show for the St. John's River. Quick turnaround, obviously, because there was a championship Monday, which we gave him a shout out last night. But because he's a good friend of the show and he's been on several times, got to give another shout out to our boy John Garrett for the dub. And I think everybody was hyped to see
John. That's way long overdue for that guy.
Well, yes, as a rookie, it's nice to see it come in the third event. But, like, I think to your point, long overdue in regards to how much work this dude has put into to get to where he's at. Like, missing the elites by, like, a few points several different times. Seeing that come full circle, I think, for him and his headspace, it's got to be an amazing confidence boost of, like, I belong here. And I think everybody is in agreement about that.
For sure.
Was also nice. I mean, we've talked multiple sides of this show about forward-facing, but was nice to see a guy. I mean, he was trinkling in a little bit, especially day four when he thought his fish left. But for the most part, he was using 360 and just plugging away, throwing that in the hair jig. Was a really fun watch. But we talked about that in much more depth yesterday on Fantasy Fishing, which was quite hilarious. Our boy, our host of Kayak Fishing Weekly, the other show, the Kayak Fishing Show on the Serious Angler Podcast Network.
Was it just you guys or did anyone else join in?
Justin Boomer and I. The crew was not rolling deep last night, but
I'm sure I was getting poked fun at, which is completely fine. I was on my way home from Erie. I got off the water at like 8 o'clock and it was a terrible drive. I was like, I'm never staying out till dark and driving home after leaving my house as the sun was rising. So
We did not poke fun at you. Deacon actually ended up joining the show. Deacon, the host of Bins for the Bass Boat, joined about 45 minutes in, but we were making fun of the Sheikin for the first 45 minutes. Oh,
I mean, that's just a given. That's like automatic at this point. That's perfect.
Yeah, it was a good time though. And Justin was, I've never seen anybody score in the 500s on fantasy Justin fishing scored before.
In the 500s.
Yes, which is why he wore a paper bag over his head for the whole show.
I think he said that in our group chat that he was going to come paper bagged.
I thought he was joking, but he was serious. He rocked it for the full hour and a half, which must not have been very comfortable. But.
That's actually pretty impressive. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to have to go back and watch that. And if he had any good points, I hope you clip them so you can play them throughout the week.
Oh, I got clips ready to rock. It's been just a hectic work week, hectic weekend. Yeah. So I have been pretty slacking on the social, so I apologize. But we'll have some pretty funny clips coming from that. And I still got one from the show we did last week with the college boys. And like Scott Sledge had a pretty funny story that we'll share on social. If you guys have not checked that episode out,
gosh. I would encourage you to. That was a good one, too.
Yeah. But last two things I gotta mention here. Big shout outs. Well, one, happy early birthday to your kiddo tomorrow to Nora. But today is 3 years ago today. I actually proposed to my wife. Ooh. So got to give the wife a shout out for the stuff she puts up with me. And then lastly, dude, the St. John's River event, which is totally like if the stars could align for the fish gods, for Rick Klund to win on his 500th event at a place that he's won twice, like, come on.
Why do you think I took him in Group E? I think he's in. I was like, I know, it's a Rick Klund Derby. I'm like, no. And he was catching him at Harris on the first, 2 days. So it's like, you know, we got to go Rick Klund on this one.
I just hope the stars can align and old Klund get the dub on the St. John's River.
It'd be incredible.
It would be.
I mean, based on what we saw at the Harris Chain, I'm sure you touched on this a little bit. I'm sure you're going to see relatively the same techniques go down at the St. John's.
It's going to be intriguing. We talked about it pretty in depth last night. So if you guys want to talk about St. John's or listen about St. John's River, that event, you guys can check out the recent show. But I don't want to keep our guests waiting too long. We told them 5-6 minutes, and here we are 10 minutes rolling deep into the show.
Typical.
Yeah. But I think without further ado, let's get them on here, the boys from the Juice Podcast. We got Mr. Shane Campbell and Mr. Wyatt Frankets. What's going on, boys?
Hello, hello.
What's going on, guys?
Not much. Hello from, you know, basically, what, 24 hours from us, I think is what it is to get down yeah. to Rayburn. But Rayburn's home for you guys, right?
It is.
Yep, yep. Sam Rayburn, I think, Shane, you kind of started more on Livingston and then transitioned to the Rayburn area, and I've been fishing there since I really got into tournament fishing at like 15, 16 years old. So I'm 28 now. So we've definitely put in a lot of time out there for sure.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit offline here in the North. We're definitely spoiled with our fisheries and definitely a lot like polar opposite from the pressure that a Rayburn gets, but also in talking about like size of fishery. I mean, dude, doesn't it take like an hour and a half or 2 hours, something like that, to drive from the south end to the north end to Rayburn, like in regards to places you can actually launch?
It's pretty big. I mean, Marion's Ferry would be at the top. That's like in the river. And then where I live is down where the tournaments are, all the way in the dam. Public is, that's a solid 50-minute run and a sketchy one at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just the size of fishery was, I went down to Texas and fished, Possum Kingdom and Toledo Bend, things like that. And that was a big wake-up call to real fisheries like in regards to anything below the north. But before we get into that, the show itself here is what we like to do on our show for anybody that's new, first time on here, is throw it back to the very beginning, give a shout-out to those that are the cause of this addiction, this lifelong addiction that we all share. So Shane, we'll kick it off with you and go to Wyatt, but who's at fault for your lifelong addiction of fishing?
Oh man, I grew up fishing. So I got a bunch of family from Montana. So truth here, I actually grew up trout fishing and walleye fishing, you know, with my dad and my uncle. We used to do an annual trip to Fort Peck, which is in Montana. But I really didn't get into bass fishing until I met my wife, who her father, David Burns, who he actually kind of got me into bass fishing on Lake Livingston, as Wyatt was saying earlier. And he was one that gave me the tournament bug for sure. You know, I started fishing out there a bunch, and I think I was in my 20s, probably early 20s, and bought a old Skeeter with a Mercury on it and started fishing tournaments. And so shout out to David Burns. He's the guy.
Heck yeah.
Awesome. Right. Yeah, man. Really, my dad, you know, my dad's taken me fishing since, you know, I was old enough to really to go, you know, and never bass fishing, mainly crappie fishing and stuff. But I kind of found the bass fishing world in high school almost, I don't want to say accidentally, but it's a really cool story. So when I was growing up, sports was a huge deal in my life, you know, every sport, baseball, basketball, everything. And as I started to get older, I fell behind the growth curve, and we didn't really know why, but it ended up being because I had a growth deficiency, and my pituitary gland wasn't producing any hormones. So once we got that figured out, with Texas Children, got all that figured out, I was probably 14, 15. I'm in high school at this point. I'm like 4'11 and 85 pounds, like soaking wet. So I can't play and be competitive at any sport. And, my high school started a fishing team, and honestly, that's the reason I'm here today, because of that. And you know, I got into that because it was a way to scratch that competitive itch. And man, it won the state championship in high school and was hooked ever since. And my dad did everything he could to get me a boat, and I got a 1997 Triton with the worst Evinrude on the back of it that I've ever seen. And limped that all the way through my senior year of college, fished for SFA, and went on to fish various different stuff, you know, fished invitationals last year. And but yeah, man, that's really it. My dad, and he's really the one that got me into fishing, but the story of how I got into tournament fishing was crazy. So
I thought for sure you were gonna say me.
No.
Well, I guess that's the question in itself too, is anybody that pays any attention to what's going down in Texas tournament wise knows that you guys have been wreaking havoc on people down there, especially on Rayburn, but Texas in general. How did you guys come to meet then? How did you guys become tournament partners?
Yeah. So I owned a tackle shop called Tackle Addict. Started that about, how long ago has that been? 9 years, I think it is, with an old friend of mine, Jeff Rude. And then we built a shop on Rayburn. This was about 7-8 years ago. Fast forward, Wyatt kind of was working for me the last few years that I owned it. And I tried firing him several times because he's a terrible employee. He wouldn't leave. But we ended up having some serious conversation. We kind of dabbled in it then, you know. He wasn't he was fishing. Who are you fishing with? Cody Barshinger?
Yeah.
College partner. That's who he was fishing with at the time. Then he kind of moved away. But so when Cody moved out, Wyatt needed a new net man. So I volunteered for the position and officially fired him so he could go spend more time on the lake. But that's kind of how it started.
Yep.
That's awesome. Fantastic. Is it always like this on the water with you guys? Just busting on each other?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's how it is. Yeah. Actually, in our 39 and a half pound video that is on our YouTube channel from Bass Champs, the first fish that Shane catches, he calls it a four. And I'm like, that's not a 4 pounder. Like, that's a 3.5 pounder.
Yeah.
So it's always something like that. You know?
Wishful thinking, right? Like,
in my defense, you know how, like, when you hit one on a jig, like at the way end of a cast, and you kind of blow their mouth open and you're just winching it. I thought it was way bigger.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's how I feel with smallmouth all the time. Now I just say they're like a pound lighter than what they actually are. And I'm like, oh, we're probably right.
Yeah.
When I first met Andy, Andy was like an Ike or Scott Martin where everything he sets the hook into, it's like, oh, it's a giant one. And then it comes up and it's not even a pound.
And I'm like, oh, come on, not that small. Maybe a pound and a half.
Oh, I think we're all guilty of that sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I mean, you have to will it into existence sometimes. So
I like that.
That's right.
Okay. If you say it's a giant 100 times, there's a chance at least 5 times it's going to be a big one. So
yeah,
playing the numbers.
That's right. And anytime you break off, it definitely was a big one.
Or it was definitely at least a fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, especially when you're in Texas, you can go. You can always say, like, "Oh yeah, that was definitely at least 8." Guaranteed. Yeah.
Brush pile, tree.
Yeah. So for a lot of team partners, you see a lot of like the almost like a polar opposite in style with guys that seem to mesh well together. So I guess for you guys, are you similar in how you fish, or do you guys jive well because you're complete opposites?
No, I would say we're actually really, really similar. And I think our thought process and how we go about each event, you know, I think one thing that did help me and Shane a lot is I fished the Invitationals last year and he fished the Opens. And when you take a step out and you do something like that and you, you know, you get on that travel level a little bit, it teaches you some things and it makes you realize that the only decisions that matter is in that 8-hour window on tournament day. So you're, you know, you don't always have to stick to practice. Me and Shane have made really good decisions on the water this year that practice did not lead us to. And I think that speaks volumes from just the last year and being open-minded. But we really like to fish offshore and focus on trying to win. I mean, we go into every event with the winning mindset and I really think that's why we mesh well, because we're not scared to take chances and or to adapt in the middle of the tournament. And that's a hard thing to do. It's an easy thing to say you're able to do it. It's a lot harder to actually do it, you know. And I think that's why we mesh really well together, because we're not scared to go make a move, even when it doesn't, you know, it's not the most comfortable thing to do in the tournament. But I think that's probably the biggest thing for us.
Yeah, I'd agree. I was trying to think of an instance where you and I were on the water and we had a disagreement about what our next move should be, or even our starting spot or any of that. And I, knock on wood, I don't think we ever have, to be honest. I think we've always kind of agreed with, you know, what's going on, how we're feeling and what we should do. So, and trusting each other to make those calls, you know, we might've made some calls where like, well, I don't know, if you say so, we'll go give it a shot, and it either works or it doesn't. But
yeah,
I think that goes a long way. That kind of trust where it's like, I think it definitely helps too. You guys have a unique partnership in the fact that one, you guys are successful together, obviously, but you're also very successful individually, solo. So it kind of I think that credibility in the fact too, one, being able to know each other well, but also in the fact that like you guys both can catch them, like straight up catch them, I think definitely helps you guys in regard to making decisions as a team, and kind of like, you know, if one guy really has that feeling driving, like you're gonna rock with it, which I think that goes a long way from a headspace standpoint, where some teams out there, and there's definitely a lot of them, and some of them do well with it, but some of them don't, where there's one guy that makes all the decisions, the other guy's just there to either have another line in the water or be the net man.
And there are days like that. There are days like that where some, you know, one of us is on, one of us isn't, and we know it. So you put your ace in the driver's seat and go get it.
That's yeah, right. Definitely. And to, you know, speak to your point, you know, with the credibility thing and the individual stuff that we've done outside of the partner stuff, like in Texas, and especially these bigger trails, like that's who you're fishing against. Like these are like power teams, like the Todd Castledine and Russell Cecils, like the Derek Mundy, Jason Bonds. Like these are guys that both are just straight hammers, and it's basically a business decision to be partners with each other too. Me and Shane are definitely friends, of course, best friends, one of the best friends, but a lot of these guys in the beginning that you see in Texas, like they teamed up as a business decision, and that's just the way it is. It really is. Like a lot of teams that you see do really well, like the Phil Marks, and I mean, the list goes on, but they always had that power team, you know, and that's one thing about the team deal that's just so different from the solo circuits, and it's a lot of fun. It really is.
Yeah, and I think to expand on that for people that are listening, especially people that are like Andy and I up here in New York, where you, unlike Texas, you can't make a living fishing local trails up here, mm-hmm. where it's like business decision. He means like, hey, I'm good, you're good, we'd be a good team partner, let's go make some money.
That's yeah.
what it means. Where you guys yeah. have that going, but also on the outside, like you said, you guys are best friends, where that definitely helps in from a big standpoint of trust,
like we yep. were saying earlier. No doubt. And, well, I will say while we're on it, like one thing that I think that helped me and Shane a lot too is like some of these other guys that team up, maybe they actually did do it like as a business decision, you know, like, hey, me and you are going 1-2 or we're always in the top 10 and we're running some of the same stuff. Why don't we just team up? You know, like that people do that. But I think me and Shane, what's really cool about us is we really learned a lot together. Like we teamed up and we grew and learned a ton together. And I think that mm-hmm. is a little different than some teams that are formed, you know? So I think it's really cool.
For sure. And I think with that, I'm pretty curious about from your guys' standpoint. And again, this answer could be completely nobody. Like you might not fear anyone, but like, who's like the one person one team, I should say, when you guys show up to the ramp in Texas for a team derby, where you're like,
there's a long list of dudes. So yeah, I mean, it's respect, right? It's like, who do we think is going to catch them in this tournament? And anytime on Rayburn or Toledo Bend, like Wyatt was saying, I mean, the list of names, I mean, Albert Collins, how many classics has that guy been to?
Two.
You know, him and Bullware. I mean, when they're in a tournament together, you like, you know, they're going to be in the top. I mean, they've busted a 40 bag on Rayburn and probably the hardest time of year to do it. Castledine, anytime you see his name, you know, he's going to be somewhere there. So it's just about respect and understand who your competitors are and know what you have to do. I mean, 39 is not safe on Rayburn, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah. I was nervous when he went to weigh in that day. I was scared.
Well, yeah, because you're sitting there, and it's like, regardless if you're fishing a team tournament or not, but you put up a bag that big, and you're like, man, is it like this everywhere? Like, are all you know what I mean? Where it's just like,
yeah,
it's not like Andy and I's little lakes that are 4 miles long, where it's like we can see everybody that's doing anything. And then, you know, it's
so
like,
you can tell if they're catching them or not because everyone's running all over the lake or they're sitting still, and you're like, uh oh.
yeah, it's crazy, dude. I mean, Danny Allison, Brian Shook are two guys that have weighed in. Like, I really consider them the big bag specialists when it comes to Sam Rayburn. And I mean, they've weighed in 49, 30 something in a tournament. So at that point, it's like, you're never safe. I mean, you're like, you're never safe, you know? Yeah. So it's crazy. It's a crazy world, but me personally, I wouldn't have it any other way. I love it. Like you alluded to the fact, that in Texas, you can actually make a living fishing locally. And that is 100% a fact. I think the difference is, when you start to look at that local and professional comparison. Now, like I said, this is us on the Rayburn and Toledo Bend area specifically, not because it, I mean, yes, you have a chance in all, the whole state of Texas, but specifically the Rayburn and Toledo area. When you start to look at it, I think the biggest difference is when you talk about making a living, if you're strictly talking about doing that fishing, you got to win. And that's the difference on that pro level. Like, you can get away with cutting a check for 10 grand or, you know, if your sponsor dollars are covering everything and that is pure profit, like, you can get away with cutting those checks at home. It's pretty much all in. You win or you don't. Like, yes, the Brandon Belt Fishing Series, they pay out pretty good down the board. But for most of the tournaments, like, you either win or second's like a dramatic draw.
Top so heavy payout for sure.
That's that scary part. Like, when there's only a few guys that have ever actually tried to fish locally around our area and make a living, because it's dang near impossible to do, you know, because you have to win. You got to at least win one or two a year if you're going to try to do it.
Right. And would you say that most of the people doing it, and sidebar on that, Adam Deacon, who's the host of our show on the network called Bits from the Bass Boat, has had Todd Castledine on to talk about exactly this, yeah, which was an incredible show, and talking about exactly what you guys are getting at. But the guys that are doing it, if they're not fishing teams from chances are they're probably a guide on one of those lakes.
For sure.
Would you say that's true?
Yeah, like, actually make, are you talking about making a living fishing?
Yeah, no, so for like the people that are trying to make a living locally in Texas, tournament fishing, if they're not on a tournament, chances are they're probably a guide on the day.
Like me, just like me and Shane. I mean, that's it. I mean, this week's the Big Bass Splash on Sam Rayburn. It's the biggest week on the lake, and I'm running two trips a day. Shane's running trips every day. We can't fish a tournament. They got a guide rule, so this is our money week, you know, and we take people out to look around and stuff like that. But yeah, no doubt. I mean, a lot of the guys, or they're, I don't know, trust fund kid or something, you know, you have a few of those, but for the most part, yeah, I mean, you're all in, guys, for sure. And, yeah, you know, you brought up Todd, and to be honest, like, Todd did do that, you know, and he's one of the only that I can actually think that did it that way, like tournament winnings. Yeah, that is very, very hard to do at a local level. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. That's ridiculous. Like, you got to be winning. You better be winning.
For sure. And the unique thing about our area is the opportunities we're given. So we have a lot of big trails in Texas, and every single one of those trails is going to pass through Rayburn or Toledo Bend, if not both, in a season. And so we're given the opportunities to win. It's not like, you know, you guys might only have one big tournament a year that, you know, and I really don't know, but just for example, something that pays, you know, $30,000 to $50,000 to the top team. I mean,
I wish.
You guys even have anything like that?
No,
like, dude, like a 10 grand is like the biggest
tournament. Like, it's like a jackpot tournament. Like, we got to get in this one. We don't even really have 10 grand.
Hey, we need to talk Brandon Belt to bring Bennett $100,000 Grand Slam on the St. Lawrence.
Oh, come on with it. No, I think, didn't they try one last year? And I think they only got like 35 boats or something.
Really? Somebody tried one?
Yeah.
Did they guarantee 100 grand for first place?
I think they had to meet a certain boat requirement to guarantee 100. Mm. And they only got like 35 or 38 boats.
That's terrible.
We can talk them into it. He's crazy. Yeah, he'll do it.
He's crazy. He'll do it.
I think it was the timing was off, because there was a lot of the bigger, like the guys that would enter up here anyway, there's a lot of like the either Toyotas going on or the Opens, or, you know, even like some of the Canadian guys that would do it, like their chances are they're fishing big tournaments up there. Yeah. I think it was, I don't want to say it was near the weekend of the Sturgeon Bay Open, which is obviously one of the biggest ones in the Midwest bass wise.
No, I think it was actually like middle of summer, like July, August.
Oh, so when basically the elites and MLF are coming up here, and
yeah, it was like sandwiched in between like two or three larger regional derbies up on the St. Lawrence. Mm. Might even
yeah, we'd love to have them up here.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. You guys don't even have like one, but that's what I'm getting
that's
at.
That's so, nuts, dude.
I mean, we probably will have at the end of the year, we'll have fished probably 7 or 8 tournaments in the season that we've had an opportunity to win north of 40, 35, 40.
That's crazy.
It is.
And that's at the team level. That's at a team amateur level, you know?
Yeah. That's pretty wicked. Well, before we get deep into the whole team strategy versus solo strategy, things like that we'd love to discuss, how did this start with you guys with the Juice podcast? Because I got to give a nod to that because it's one of my absolute favorites that are out there. And like we were talking about, there's a million freaking fishing podcasts nowadays, but very few stand out. And I think y'all do a spectacular job. So how did I mean, obviously becoming tournament partners, but who was the first one that's like, hey, let's do a podcast?
I guess me, but really we both, owning the tackle shop, we have these conversations all the time, and I appreciate it. You're making me blush by bragging on us like that, but, we have these conversations just like I'm sure you guys do all the time on and off the water. I mean, we talk about this stuff nonstop, and I don't, you know, the idea just kind of spiraled from there. We're just like, you know what? I'm going to go buy a camera, a soundboard, some microphones, and we'll ask our buddy Ron if we can glue some styrofoam to the wall and get after it. And so for the first year or two, I mean, how many episodes did we do? We did like one a month.
We were terrible.
It wasn't serious. We weren't like really trying to take it serious and just kind of wanted to have fun with it. And we still do have fun with it. But we took a step back after last year, him, like he said, fishing the invitationals, me fishing the opens, and really had to kind of assess what platforms. I mean, social media is the thing now. It doesn't matter if you can catch them. It matters if you can move the needle. And if you can use your ability to catch them to move the needle on your social platforms, then you're the best of both worlds. Otherwise, you got to be a influencer. I'm not dogging those that are successful at, you know, being an influence over a fisherman. Props to you for finding a lane that's working for you. But so we really kind of looked at this as an opportunity, like, well, if we lean in, you know, and really take it, and I would say we're probably at like 60% serious, 70%. You know, we don't do it as often as we should. We're, you know, I'm always kind of on wide a little bit, but he's busier with guiding than I am, and we're having fun with it, man.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, like Chane said, we didn't take it serious at the beginning, and now we are, you know. And I don't, like he alluded to, he's exactly right. I was always told growing up from all the old heads at Rayburn, hey, man, just catch him. Everything else will work out. Maybe used to, not anymore. You know, like, and you got to have that presence, man. You got to have that presence, and you got to be a marketable person. And Shane's ringtone, dude.
That was.
I was like, wait a second. I didn't touch my soundboard.
Restart it again, Bailey. Restart it.
But yeah, man, that's yeah. It. I mean, and that's the deal with it. And like Shane said, we just really like to have fun, and we like to get, you know, just get the real, try to get the realness out of guys, you know, and see where what they're about, you know, from the fishing world. And that's my favorite part about it.
Yeah, I think you guys do a very good job of that. I compare it to the kind of conversation that a Mercer can bring out of some of his guests is what I think you guys get out of yours, where it's that's something like for me anyway, as I guess we'll categorize it as a quote unquote podcaster. Is happening?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Nice.
Hey,
happy birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
For people listening, balloons just showed up on my screen. We're throwing a day before birthday party for Nora, Andy. That's
she'll be thrilled. I'll let her know.
Yeah, but like that's something I strive for. Like there's some people I look at that I look at for like inspiration. And I think you guys fall into that bucket. But that's the kind of conversation nowadays, podcast-wise, show-wise, that sets people apart from the other million shows that go on there that say, hey, what's your favorite knot? What's your favorite color to throw? Where it's like there's a little bit of that in here. Like Andy does an incredible job with that, but going way more in depth on the Lure Lab show that we have. But like it shows like y'all's that you can bring out the character and the side that people don't get to see. That's what helps people stand out. So it's I give kudos to getting that rolling. And I think if you guys can give what you said, Shane, you know, 60-70% right now, if y'all can hit 100, we're all screwed. We'll be sitting at the wayside getting the scraps from you guys. But
oh man, I appreciate the kind words. We're a fan of yours as well. I mean, honestly, I admire you guys' work ethic. I mean, Wyatt and I were talking about you just the other day. It's like, man, these dudes,
it's all that guy.
They get after it, man. And you know, makes me feel lazy. And you know, you're always posting, always on there and working your tail off, and sponsors see that, and I'm sure they appreciate that. And I hope you're getting, you know, that in return from them, because you deserve it. But man, we have a cool sport, we have a cool industry that, you know, we can get on here and collaborate and talk together and have fishing conversation. You know, it is a competitive market, but we're all rooting for each other. At least that's how we feel.
Yeah. Completely agree. Like Andrew Hayes and I talk about this. He is over at Tackle Talk podcast, where it's, if you look at from the mindset of collaboration versus competition, then you're going to go far, especially if you can be consistent with it, because at the end of the day, it's all a community. It's all a network. And if, cause like with Andrew, there's so many things that I've told Andrew this to his face, where it's like, I see him do certain things and I'm like, damn, I wish I thought of that. Like, there's a lot of cases like that for multiple different shows where I'm like, damn, that was really smart. I wish I was intelligent like that. And I know I'm never going to, but it's like, we share ideas with each other. And it's to your point, like that collaboration, it's what's going to help each other's shows. And really, when you think about it, as the shows grow, the impacts that we can have, like with this whole, from at least talking tournament side of fishing, we can be the ones to help turn the tide of this whole negative, you know, side of fishing right now, which sucks to see day in, day out, of all these comments rolling in. But from that, like, it's, we're the ones that can help at least turn that tide or fight that and kind of show again, like the positive side, where somebody might, like the comments made me so mad about the whole Hamner thing winning the classic. People, oh, he's a scoper, of course, where it's like, if y'all knew Hamner and you got to spend time with the guy, you would never say a lick of that, anything like that, because and that's what these shows can do, is show that side of the angler that you don't get to see on Bass Live very much.
Right.
Or just 100%. I saw that story you posted, the comment on Garrett's win. I was like, did you even watch the tournament, dude? Like,
oh my gosh.
What are you talking about?
They literally yelled on live, oh, we're not even using forward-facing sonar, right? Like,
yeah.
My mindset, like, we're just chucking around and catching some biggins. Like,
my mindset on him was like, I was like, me and Sharon Todd, I was like, bro, this dude's throwing a hair jig on the hair of Shane, dog. Like, that's gangster. I don't care. It's awesome.
That was the coolest change I've probably seen anybody do on live in a long time. The way you adapted to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we talk about it a lot. Like, this rookie class is throttling them.
Oh, it's unreal how good every single one of them are doing.
It's nuts. It's freaking nuts. Like, Trey McKinney, season continues to go well. We might see a 19-year-old win AOI. Like, this is – it's retarded, dude. And I don't think some people like it. And I think that's what it boils down to. I really do. I just don't think some people like it. Seeing – rookies come in and compete right off the bat, and I don't know, man. I think what I foresee happening, I know this is a subject we could go talk for hours on, but I think the EQ guys that come in, you're going to start seeing it more and more. Like, that average age of the Elite Series angler is going to just continue to drop, you know. And I don't have any problem with it. That's just me, though, you know. I think these guys are working hard, really hard, and to discredit some of these guys that are coming up and act like Four Faces Sonar is just given to you is just ridiculous. So,
yeah, that is the one thing that drives me absolutely nuts. The guys that say, you know, anyone that's throwing or that's using forward, like, none of their catches count. It doesn't matter. Like, so easy. Like, I just, one guy that made the same comment on the whole John Garrett thing. And he's like, he goes, if you ever want to see how easy it is, come fish with me. I'll show you how easy forward facing sonar is. And I'm like, obviously you don't pay any attention to the show whatsoever. You're just
counting. I'll tell you what, I was smallmouth fishing yesterday. I probably had 80 smallies chase my dang minnow, and they wouldn't eat it on forward facing after 130. So they would chase it from 80 feet out to 5 feet underneath the boat, and they wouldn't touch a dang thing. It's not as easy as people think it is.
And we're talking dumbfish. You know, we're talking smallmouth.
I slow it down, they would slow down. I speed it up, they would speed up and just stay right behind it. It didn't matter what color, what bait I threw at them, they did the same damn thing.
Oh, dude, as soon as we posted that 39.5-pound video that on Raven from Bass Champs, I told Shane, I was like, I hope you're ready. Here come all the comments. Because we weighed in 39.5 pounds on a spinning rod. And that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. And I knew the comments were coming, bro.
I'll catch them on whatever I have to throw. I don't care.
And it's crazy the comments that come in when they're like, of course, catching them on a freaking spit. The hate from throwing a spinning rod, like, just because that's your means of catching them. And it's just, it's some of stuff like that that's just so petty to me that I think.
Oh, it's crazy, dude.
Yeah, I just learned that some of these ones you just got to ignore them, like let them just look stupid. But there are some comments where I'm like, I can't.
Oh, it's hard.
Can't resist. Like I have to fire back something.
Yeah.
But just start giving them thumbs ups. But I mean, I want to get back to the team event and fishing here. Michael Bradley has a really good question for you guys. He's asking, when fishing a team event and you establish a pattern, do you both go all in and throwing the same bait, size, and color, or do you mix up what you're throwing?
That's a great question. To start the day, obviously seasonal patterns, we all kind of have an idea as anglers, you know, what we want on the deck and what we want to start with. But we usually, we usually try to start with something different, or one of us will make an adjustment while the other one is trying to, you know, make something work. For example, the spinning rod deal he's talking about, we were trying to catch him on a football jig first. I mean, that would be ideal to be able to just crack them with a 7.6 heavy and winch them in on 20-pound test, but they didn't want to bite that. So Wyatt picked up the old minnow bait, and there's actually a clip in the video. I say, I'm putting everything else down that I need to do this the rest of the day. It's over. Like, so that's when it kind of clicked. You know, he was doing something different. The only time I think we'll really throw the same thing, why you probably say the same thing, is cranking. Mm-hmm. Just because of busting up schools, like you might only have
same one bait and same color. You won't even mix up colors.
Man, I don't know. I think it just kind of depends. Like, man, like we throw so many different freaking crankbaits, like depth and watercolor, all that. You know, it varies so much. But yeah, I mean, I think it depends on like how dialed in we are on something, you know? Like, we got third at Cedar Creek not long ago, and we found a pretty dang good shad spawn, and we were both throwing the same, you know, stuff at them. So, you know, I think it's just kind of – it's so situational, but, you know, when you're – definitely when you're trying to figure stuff out, like when you're in that bind, you're definitely throwing something different, you know?
Yeah. Well, and to your point, like, with that, I think the cranking bite, to your guys' point, is when they're firing on it, just matter. You got to keep a bait down there just to keep them going. Just keep them fire, strength in numbers. Which is like, even sometimes, like, even not talking team tournaments, but I've seen it personally on the kayak side. I've seen it like on the boat side as well, where it's like you got a competitor where it's like, hey, I'm competing against you, but like we can both wreak some havoc here. Come here, let's keep them fired up. Like, let's, you know, keep them throwing it. Whereas like if one person's throwing, either put them in the box or measure them, whatever it may be, they might shut off in that time it takes you to get back up and get throwing again. Whereas that person can be throwing, keeping that school fired up so that you can go back in and catch them, where it's totally understand it from that point. But you do see a lot of that where it's like a guy that's up front throwing something power and the guy, you know, behind him or next to him, whatever, is throwing a drop shot or a shaky head, where it's, you're throwing some sort of mix, where I think there's a lot of that. But like, to your point, like when you get something figured out, it's like, why even, like, if it's working, throw it, like double down.
But no, I would say Shane definitely nailed it. Like, the crankbait thing is like, if we've got some up there and we know we're both gonna do it, it's like, hey, like, count it down, let's both throw in there, try to double up, you know, and freaking try to get them while the getting's good, you know what I mean? But yeah, And another thing about those crankbaits, it's like, it's so hard. Some of these fish are so pressured, like, you don't want to blow them out of there. And certain crankbaits are built on a more aggressive frame than other deep diving crankbaits. So, like, maybe you've got one that's a little more subtle, silent. Maybe one's a lot more aggressive, like, you know, like a 5 or 10XD is built on a really aggressive frame. And they're really wanting to eat, you know. So there's all kinds of stuff like that that goes into it. But definitely here in the years past, you got to be a little more careful with that crank invite, because you will blow them out of there if they're not ready to eat.
I didn't even think about something like that. That's one of the biggest things I've learned leaving New York to go fish is like, oh, these fish have brains. Where in New York,
oh, yeah,
do that. It doesn't matter what you throw, as long as you're
in, yeah,
you can get bit.
Yeah, if they're active, they're gonna bite up in New York. It's kind of silly at times, dude. But they're bass, though. They can be just as fickle some days.
Oh, dude.
Not the big Rayburn ones, man. We've literally made a conscious decision, like, no, we're not firing crankbaits in there as bad as we want to, because it will trigger the biggest bite.
Yeah.
And we'll be like, no, we're not doing it. We're not risking blowing out the school. Let's try to pick one off at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and to that point, really fast, though, we have a comment from our buddy Clint Bartley here. Said, this is the coolest podcast duo going on right now with the Serious Juice or the Juicy Serious Angler.
That's what's up.
Man, right. Appreciate you watching.
But with that, we had Buddy Gross on probably – oh, man, almost 2 years ago now. Yeah,
it's been a while since Buddy's been on.
Yeah, and that was one of the things he was talking about is he'll start, like, when it comes to, like, with him, obviously, ledge schools, he's one at Harris Chain, too. Like, that is one of the best offshore guys, in my opinion, right now.
No doubt.
Tennessee River Hammer.
Yes, yes. But he was talking about how he starts with a football jig. Start slow before you go and decide to do something aggressive, like throw a crankbait, to your exact point there, where it's like, you can work your way up to it, but start something that's subtle where you're not completely blowing that school out, where it's, if you start fast, you might, you know, scare some fish off and, you know, you're done for a while. You have to let them reset. Oh, yeah. Whereas the jig or a Carolina rig or a worm, if they don't eat it, they're not going to care. Like they're still going to stay there. It's not going to be that intrusive. That's that's a great tidbit right there. Mm-hmm. For you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
So really quick, I looked at it, just to make sure I was going to say it earlier, but I wanted to fact check myself, because we talked about it a little bit last night, but AOI for Bassmaster right now.
What, four out of the top 10 are rookies?
Four out of the top six are rookies.
Yeah.
It's insane. After three events, it's not like the first event or something. That's nuts, man. Like a good quarter of the way. Is it a quarter or is it a third? Third of the way through the series.
Yeah, here's a question for you. Do you think it's less impressive or more impressive that you have Jordan Lee sitting in third after fishing the BPT for all those years?
Oh, dude.
He's home, man. Look what happened to BP when he came back to the elites, man. It's the same deal.
Yeah, I'm surprised it took him so long.
Shane says it best about Joe Lee. That dude's just fishy. I mean, he's just fishy, and he's just, dude, I don't know. He just makes really good decisions, and you can't even really put your thumb on it, what makes him so good, but he's just good. I mean, just flat out good, period. You know?
Yeah, I want to tell a funny story about Jordan. So when we first started TacLag, my original business partner, he wanted to sponsor guys, right? He wanted some credibility in the industry, and we were kind of, he was throwing a lot of money at it this way. And so he had sponsored Keith Combs, and he's like, I want to pick up one more guy. And this was right before the Conroe Classic. And I said, if I could pick anybody, it would be Jordan Lee. And I said, I don't know why, but it's only a matter of time. He's going to win something. It was like I had a crystal ball. So we call this dude in. Jeff flies him down to Texas, sign a deal with him. He goes and wins the Classic the next month. I mean, I've always been a fan of that dude. He has just got something.
Yeah, he's got the, I don't think it's talked about enough, but you got like the mental side where we've said it several times and I'll go to my grave with it. I think Brandon Polinick is by far the best angler on any tour when it comes to the strategy and mental side of it. But I think Jordan Lee is a little bit looked over when it comes to the mental side, where I think he just straight up goes into these tournament days and just doesn't care about it. Like, he just goes in so free. He's like, I'm just going to do whatever I want. You know, and I think you can see that when you watch him on live too, just like his personality, where he's just kind of free floating. You know, he gets a gut feeling, he's going to go do it. Doesn't have any ifs, ands, or buts. No questioning about it. But I think you can see that a little bit. Like, you can see he jokes around the whole time. Like, he's just going fishing, having fun. Like, he hooked one on the hair jig on day four, and he's like, oh, big old smallmouth. And I had the commentators like, what? What did he just say? He's like, big old smallmouth. Nah, just kidding.
Yeah, he's cool. That's cool, funny. Dude. You're right, though. You know, another guy that kind of reminds me of the same stuff we're talking about is John Cox. I mean, just a free, just, man, there's something to be said about either not caring or not stressing. I don't, there's something to be said about that in tournaments. I mean, it goes a long ways.
They trust their ability.
Yeah. Well, it's total sidebar, but a John Cox. We absolutely love forward facing sonar. Love, you know, talking about it. We've been weaning off talking about it a little bit, in regards to everybody and their mothers talking about it. But I do love, while I'm sitting there and I love using it, love catching them on it and seeing guys catch them on it, learn from it. I also love just getting behind the guy that's like fighting against it, like a John Cox that refuses to throw it or put it on his boat. I just love, I don't know. I love that side of like getting behind the guy who's like, yeah, brother. Like he's not.
Well, dude doesn't even have a spot lock.
Yeah, dude. Was sick. And was it day one or day two where he's got the Fortrex still on his boat?
Yeah,
bro. He only puts the Ultrex on when it's smallmouth time. It's kind of funny.
Like, this dude, John Cox, is so freaking funny, dude. When I fished the Invitationals last year, I'll tell you a really funny story, dude. So he fished. He won Lake of the Ozarks. Looking at him, imagine that. And he fished Eufaula, I think, Clark's Hill. Dang, he might have fished them all. I know he fished the Potomac. So, anyways, we're at the Potomac River. It's hot. It's hot, hot. And I think we're in a choir, one of the major creeks. Anyways, he rolls by. I see this boat rolling by, and I don't think anything of it at first. But I see this big aluminum boat, and he's got this ginormous umbrella over the top of it. I'm talking about the biggest umbrella, dude. Like, I'm not talking just like a little handheld umbrella. Like, the whole entire boat is covered with an umbrella. I'm like, dude, that's freaking John Cox. And he's just idling around, just idling, taking it easy.
He's just catching some shade, man. That's all.
Dude, just not a care in the freaking world, bro. Like, he literally doesn't care. He's got a freaking tarp over the top of his aluminum boat out there on the Potomac River in practice, idling around. He doesn't care.
Everybody knows the John Cox, Keith Carson brotherhood, basically, growing up together. And they do a lot of the similar stuff. And I put together a Pure Fishing media junket up here in New York. And it was, we had Keith Carson up, and we've had Keith on the show a bunch. And like, those two are like peas in a pod, carbon copies of each other. And he brought that out on the aluminum. It's like it's a full like pontoon boat looking thing. I don't even know what you call it, but it like actually rigs to the boat, and it's like the whole shade over thing. And it was one of those days where it was just started to downpour, and we look over, and it's Keith and the media people in his boat, and they're all just huddling under, just trolling with Fritz signs on the back of his boat. It was the funniest damn thing. But he's like, yeah, dude, practice when it's really hot. I just kind of just drive around, and then I'll pull up near a shade line, and I'll sit on my driver's seat, skip my wacky rig up there, see if I get bit, and that's how I practice. And I'm like, these guys, like, just, they're at a whole different level of just mental side, just not caring.
There it is. Michael Bradley, the Bimini top.
There you go.
Yeah, that's it. And it's gangster. I envy it. I would freaking rock that thing, dude. We fished some hot tournaments down here in Texas in the summer. I'm talking hot.
So, yeah, I was telling Keith, because he was actually joking, and he's like, yeah, you can only go like 35 miles an hour because then it'll like blow off and you're trying to run faster. But like, dude, I'm like, man, you gotta deck that out. That's prime real estate for a company to go there and deck you out a custom.
Oh, yeah.
Even, like, real estate, you should put like a Mr. Machine on it and like cut little holes.
Oh, yeah.
That goes up, and then as you're idling, you got mist coming on you the whole time.
There you go.
Staying cool.
Yeah. I like it. Somebody needs to make one.
That's right. But there's so many of those. I could just like the characters and this is a great conversation in regard to one of the things Ken Duke had told me probably 2 years ago now was he thinks the biggest problem in the future that at that time anyway, that the tournament fishing faces is the fallout of personalities in fishing, where we're coming up on a generation where, you know, Swindle's years are numbered.
Yeah.
You know, and you got guys like that, like an Iaconelli, that the people that they look to, like those people that they attribute, maybe not even care about where they finish, but like the Swindles, he could finish last in every tournament and people are going to show up to a weigh-in just to hear him on stage. Yeah. Like just one of those characters, you know? And that's one of the things now where I think as more of these guys start getting comfortable, and this is back to the social media conversation, where getting comfortable on stage or on social media showing who they really are, I think we're going to be okay, because you see guys like a John Cox or a Keith Carson, a Matt Robertson. You see like Justin Hamner coming out of his shell. You got Tyler Williams. Like you start seeing more of these guys kind of, you know, crack out of their shells, and it's cool to see that part. And that's what, like, again, this kind of comes full circle. Like these podcasts is a great way to show that part of these guys, especially for guys that might have, you know, they might not care or like the social media side, where this is a way for people to realize who these people actually are, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never thought about it like that, but you're totally right. No, personalities are a huge part of the sport. And yeah, I mean, I think these guys, like you said, as they get more comfortable and just be themselves, no matter how weird or freaking, you know, dumb people might think you are, just be yourself. I mean, dude, Aaron Martins was a freaking legend, but he was a little weird. And we still loved it.
Oh, yeah. Like, he was a squirrely dude on camera.
Yeah.
You, and everybody knew every still one him. Of his thoughts every time the camera was on him.
Yeah. And everybody freaking loved him, dude. And he was awesome. And he was just being himself. And so I think that's what it really boils down to for those guys.
Yeah. And like a testament to that, to kind of give a more prime example, saw it in recent classics, but saw it big time this year too. But like, was Tennessee River. People would wait till Swindle got on stage at the classic. And then as soon as Swindle got done on stage, like there'd be 30 people left to weigh in. Half the arena would leave on day one and two. It was kind of wild. But I saw it big time with Milliken this year. Like it was day one, Milliken got on stage. There's still a whole bunch of people left to weigh in. Half that damn arena left.
That's crazy. It's
nuts to see that impact.
I don't know. He might be the biggest name in bass fishing. I don't know. I mean, seriously. I mean, it's hard to – that dude's like, he's got it going on. I mean, he does.
He's got it going on for sure.
He's got a huge following.
Massive. The amount of people with 402 shirts that I saw at the Classic, you know, the amount of people with Onum hats that I saw, like, it's guys like that. Like, it's – you're going to have Brandon Lester fans. You're going to have –
right,
you know, West Logan fans. You're gonna have guys that 100% have a fan base, but it's guys like that that just maybe get against the grain of are comfortable and showing just kind of how much of a weirdo they are. Like to your point, Aaron Martins, I think people loved him for being that weirdo.
Yeah.
Where I think if he was like another guy that was your same old, you know, fisherman that said the same spiel on stage and things like that, I think he'd have a fan base, but I don't think people would love Aaron Martins for Aaron Martins if he wasn't the way he is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's, I think that speaks volume. That's why, you know, the more guys I get to know on the pro side, I'm just like, dude, let people know who you are. Embrace it.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't know how I feel about people knowing that about me. And I'm like, well, unless it's a bad thing, then like, just
who cares?
Let it rip. Yeah.
No one's gonna care. So I'm going to throw a question back at you. How much of that you think is from the industry sponsors and non-endemic sponsors and guys being cautious? And I won't even say we have cancel culture necessarily in our sport, but you know what I mean? Where there's guys that are always a little leery. Well, I don't want to, you know, say too much or whatever. I just want to kind of stay in this lane, this model that's given to us of what a professional fisherman is supposed to be and act like. And it's kind of boring sometimes. I know what you're saying, but I mean, how much of that's on the industry to let us let loose a little bit? Let these guys.
I don't know if it's so much the industry or just people are afraid to show like who they truly are. Like Do you truly think Dave Mercer would be the MC of Bass if he didn't have his TV show before he became the MC and everybody that followed bass fishing and saw him on national television once a week? I think it was on the Outdoor Channel. Like, he probably got that interview or part of it because of his personality that he showed on his TV show. I think, like, in the society that we live in, we're so fearful of being judged and how people think, or how we think people will react based on the way we act, that we tend to hide in our own skin than really live.
Yeah.
I think both are correct. I don't think there's, I think it's windows of time where it's, I think to your point, there was a model for anglers to follow to make it in the industry. But I think all it starts with one, like talking about Mercer, the person who's, and Mercer's talked about this himself, this is not like coming from my knowledge or anything, this is straight from Mercer on his podcast, has talked about it, where he would probably not be the MC if it wasn't for Mark Zona. And if anybody knows Mark Zona, Mark Zona is a character in himself. So it takes one.
Hilarious.
All it does, it takes one, and you get a train to come from that, where all it takes is one brand, like say Ugly Stick with Matt Robertson. Like all it does is it takes one brand to like be a case study for other people, for it's like, let's use Mike Iaconelli as an example. He came in completely different from the rest of the field. Some people hated him for it, and a lot more people loved him for it. And now, because he's just that vibrant personality, he's loud, he's not afraid to show who he is, not afraid to show his New Jersey go nuts tantrum. I think that's part of the reason why he's one of, take tournament winnings away, why he's one of the ones that's making the most money in the fishing industry,
sure,
because of who he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's guys that are able to embrace that. Like, there's a way that, there's a reason why Matt Robertson is doing well each year because of that. You know, so I think it's, if you can embrace that side of it, like, I mean, we still have a lot of it today where it's the clean cut, same formula it's been for years, where it's, it might have worked back then. But I think what guys are learning now, like, guys that are learning that YouTube and social media is their way to make more money outside of tournament fishing. You need to evolve. You need to change where it's going to be, you know, that we're going to see in like a year or two, maybe even longer, but every angler now seems to have a YouTube channel where it's, we're going to have something else new that comes along where it's, you're going to have to stand out, where now it's the guys like a Scott Martin that stands out amongst a field of YouTube tournament anglers because of the production, where it's, you're going to have a whole mix of that. Like, there's something new that's going to be come along where it's, everyone's got a YouTube channel and people are going to become saturated and used to it, where you're going to have to find something brand new to it, where it's, I think like Kyle Patrick's doing a great job on his YouTube channel now because he's one, embracing his quirkiness, but doing something completely different format wise with his videos. So it's stuff like that. I think guys are going to have to look at where it's, you're going to have to one, stay ahead of things, but two, I think realness is the industry leader in a lot of things now, where it's people, it's a breath of fresh air, where it's always been the standard, where it's, you know, I teased it a little bit last night, but I love watching more guys put an effort behind social media, but I totally want to crack some fun at the whole you're about to blast off and you're on social media and you're like, we're here, Sam Rayburn, day one tournament. We're going to go out there and see where the cards fall. Like, I want to play off that and do like, hey, it's Tuesday night. I'm in my basement. Got my blackfish gear to keep me comfy. We're about to do a podcast. Like, here we go. So,
like, it's actually kind of funny.
Yeah, like that's the standard, and people.
I totally agree. When you were sitting there talking, I kept thinking about how much the industry has changed, and you're right. Like, there seems to be a new wave of guys standing up and kind of saying it like it is, or not hiding behind closed doors. But to Shane's point, guys, there's certain guys that maybe don't have that name built up yet, where they can take a chance and say what they really think about an organization or what they really think about something, because maybe their sponsors are tied to that very organization that they might say something negative to. So guys definitely hold back on certain things that happen on the water that they know happen within the organization. Look, I know it for a fact, because it's a tough deal on our podcast, where we know, because we had these conversations with some guys that would come on the show, And we know that they know some juice, but they can't share it on the show. Right. I mean, they won't do it. They won't put their career in jeopardy, their sponsor dollars on the line to do it. And you halfway can't blame some of them, you know. But no. There's guys that hold back. They do. Now there's guys like James Watson who don't care, you know, and I think we need more of them. But from some of these guys that don't have that big of a name built up, yeah, it is tough. It really is. And you can feel for them in that way, you know. Like you throw the example like G-Man. Yeah, he'll tell it like it is because if his sponsor's dropping him tomorrow, he's probably done pretty well enough in the industry that he'd be all right. Milliken will tell you like it is because he's built a freaking dynasty on YouTube. He don't need a sponsor either. Like James Watson will tell you that is because he's got his own money. Like these guys, a lot of these guys that will tell it like it is, they got a little backup. They got some guns loaded in the back. You know what I mean? So
I got a landing spot
for sure. I do feel for some of these guys that can't.
I didn't mean to go off on a wild tangent there and start.
No. But I see that. I see that happen, you know?
Yeah. I think it's, I encourage everybody that's trying to chase that tournament dream, whether you're trying to chase the industry side or tournament fishing or your goal is to be a YouTuber or whatever it is, the better you can just be yourself.
Yeah, you.
And not be afraid to show it. Obviously, there's a line right there, right? Like it's.
Yeah. Don't be.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You're like a total POS. Don't be yourself. Be somebody else.
Yeah. I understand there's probably certain things. Like there's certainly like the four of us could go have a beer and have locker room talk that is okay amongst the four of us, but there's definitely certain things you probably shouldn't say on a live podcast. Because it's things that a sponsor will call you like, hey, that thing you said last night, probably shouldn't say that anymore or you're fired. Or, you know, it's kind of like one of those things. But
or they won't even give you a warning. They're just like, you violated a contract, so we're letting you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, where there's like I think that's an obvious, you know, there's a line there between like being vulgar, obviously just doing it wrong, but. Like there's some brands that don't agree with Matt Robertson with the cutoff shirt and smashing cans on the classic stage, where brands like Ugly Stick are like, that's why we signed that guy because of his personality. Yeah. Where it's, I think some embrace it, you know, it's something raw. It's like, it's a guy going out and just having fun. And I think there's a lot of that where sometimes I think with tournament fishing, I love to see this more is guys are very serious about it, which I think they should be, but I think they're almost too serious where it's like, it's almost you go and watch a classic and it's 30 of the same speeches on stage, you know, where it's, if you can break away from that, that's how you're going to stand out where it's
stand out. Yeah.
You know, it's, but it, again, that's like to your point, why like it's hard to try to take that stab down a different road that no one else is, you know, you don't know if they're going to like it or not. You know,
it's a fine line. It's a fine line.
I think at the end of the day, guys just need to realize that all of us anglers are weirdos to begin with because we're in this sport and know that somebody's going to resonate with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
That was one of the biggest things. Like Luke Palmer is a great example of that. And I'll tell Luke to his face this, but like, I think he was one of those standard good old boys, working man that had the same old spiel when he got on stage till he started his YouTube channel and kind of got comfortable with where he's at, and now you see his personality, and Luke's becoming a huge name.
He is for sure.
It's stuff like that's a prime case study of exactly that.
Just, yeah.
Yep.
That's a good example. Easy.
Yeah. Love that tangent. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Good.
So with that, I'm kind of curious. We're talking about, you know, the goofy side. You guys got any shenanigans that you like to do, whether on the road or pre-tournament day or on tournament day, like any rituals or anything like that?
I don't know about rituals, but we are constantly messing with each other, as you saw before we started recording in a little bit here. But, so that one video we have, we've never put a GoPro in because we act like idiots. Mm-hmm. And we forgot where it was half the time, but... Man, I don't know. Wyatt?
No, we don't have any rituals, honestly. We really don't. We just
we're definitely not camera ready when we're on the boat. That's for sure. We need to get a little better on that if we're gonna record ourselves more often.
That's for sure. That video that we put out, that was bad. We went back and watched that footage, dude. We said some really I don't know what we were talking about. Like some of the stuff we said, like definitely cannot be on YouTube. Cancel for is. Sure.
Yeah.
That happens. I think
we all understand that.
Yeah.
Other than potty breaks, that's probably.
Oh yeah. No, yeah, I definitely have to take.
Wyatt's regular. I'll put it that way.
I'm a regular.
And it's usually a takeoff. And it's like, you have the most inconvenient timing.
Hey, when you got to go. Yeah. Oh, so are we saying Dude Wipes needs to sponsor the Juice Podcast?
Dude, that'd be awesome. Shane thinks it's like disgusting. Like Shane wants to go to the bank or.
I like my privacy.
I'm like, dude, I don't just hang. Just. Get me over here. I'll hang my butt off the back of the boat. Let's get it done, you know?
I love that.
Wyatt will do that with a perfect stranger co-angler.
Hey, buddy. Oh, dude, I did.
I'm going to get back there with you for a minute.
This year, day three of the Toyota, I told my co, I literally turned around, looked at him on the back deck and said, hey, bro, me and you are fixing to get real acquainted. And he was like, what do you mean? I was like, I'm fixing to take a deuce off the back of the boat. I was like, I have no choice. It has to happen right now. And he's like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, dude, face the front or not. But I got to do it. So I did.
Where you look is your choice. But I'm
No shame, dude.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't know if you wanted to go down the potty humor route on that, but I mean, that's really the only funny thing about Wyatt. Other than that, he's kind of boring.
Yeah, right.
So with that, that's actually really I encourage people to go listen to the one we did with the College Boys last week with Scott Sledge was saying from the University of Montevallo team, him and Corey, I think they said it was on Apopka on the Harris Chain event that Tyler Corey leaned into one and on the back of the deck, it was Scott. He was sitting there, pants down, taking a piss, and hooked into one. Was a good one. This is like the perfect co-angle. We gave him props for it, but straight up, didn't even stop. Pants still down. Ran to the front deck and leaned over, like laying down, grabbing this fish.
Oh,
you know,
God.
Just moon to the sky, like for everybody to see, and got the fish. But I'm like he said, he stood up. I was like, dude. Why are your pants down still?
That story was wild.
That's awesome.
That's hilarious.
Talk about dedication. I'm like, man, I don't know if I would or would have wanted you guys to be running a GoPro with that, but it's a great story nonetheless.
So, yeah.
I have a quick question for both of you guys. And I think it's that Toyota or Invitational. Which one of you guys got to fish with Sakai?
Yeah, I fished with Sakai. Sakai was my co.
We both
on day three.
Yeah, go ahead.
Did you fish with him too, Shane?
I fished with him in an open, but he's talking about the Invitational.
Yeah, I hope he wasn't your day three partner.
No, he was. It was a Toyota. I didn't Invitational don't have co-anglers. So Toyota. I drew him on Rayburn, and he was the fishiest dude. I mean, he's nasty.
Yeah, I love that guy. He lives up here with us.
He's awesome, dude.
He messaged me. He goes, I fished with both of those guys. I was like, okay, now I have to ask him.
Oh, he's nasty, dude. I remember telling him that final day, I was like, hey, bro, it's going to be calm when we run up here. I said, we got to make a good run. But on the way back, it's going to get bad. It's going to get really rough. And I remember him saying something about, like, oh, I'm from New York or something, like big waves. I was like, all right, well. We'll see, you know. So
he just holds on, man. He don't care.
Dude, it started getting rough, and it was a northwest wind, which is right down the pop on Rayburn. And anybody that made that final day will tell you it was bad. Like, some of the biggest waves I've probably ever been on. That says a lot about Rayburn. And, dude, I look over at him after about the third or fourth one we hit when we get the big water, you know, and I'm like, are these as big as the ones in New York? He's like, oh, yeah. It was blowing. That day, so yeah, he's a fishy dude.
He's got to be the most dominant co-angler right now.
Oh, for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah, no doubt. He's a stud. There is one more guy that fishes with Toyotas. He's won a lot too. I don't remember his name. Tall guy. He's won a few derbs too. He's won a few boats.
Yeah, I had Sakai at Bugs Island, and I apologize, Sakai, if you're listening. That was literally the biggest bomb tournament I've had. Mostly on day one. He drew me on day two, and I felt bad for him. I was scoping stumps. That's all I had. That's all I had, man. I'm sorry. He was trying real hard. He was making some adjustments back there. He picked off a few, but I could tell he was frustrated with my approach. He did not approve. Like, man, I'm trying to scrap up 11 pounds and get out of here.
When's he going to the front of the boat?
He's got 21 foot Camus. I know he stuck his nose, I think, in the Toyota up at the St. Lawrence. But I mean, if it's working for you, I think this was like, I'm going to paraphrase him. He's like, being a co-angler works for me. So why would I go to the front if I'm
okay? I didn't know.
So
I didn't know, like, because I mean, if he wanted to go to the front, he'd probably be in trouble.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'll ask him. I'm going to see him this week, I think. So I'll ask him when he's going to go to the front and I'll report back to you.
So. There you go. He's dangerous. Yeah,
there's a few of those that if they made that jump, it'd be scary to watch.
It's a tough transition, though, too, to go from the back to the front. Like fishing club level like tournaments around here, I know it's not saying much, but when guys will do really well from the back, just skipping Senkos around, right? And all of a sudden they go to the front, they can't find fish. And it takes them a long time to transition, even in New York water. So, I mean, it's not easy to learn how to do all those little things. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's the issue with him, but I mean, when he's on his own boat, I'm fishing next to him. He's catching them just as good as he catches them out of the back. So,
Yeah. Oh, he's a hammer. I had one of your guys as a local St. Lawrence River hammers on day one of the open up there. I knew it when he got in my boat. He had Loomis's and Stella's, just a serious look. Like, he had some serious equipment. And I was looking at all his setups. I'm like, oh, gosh, I'm in trouble. And, of course, you know the game on the St. Lawrence River, drifting backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're at the disadvantage then.
He was the day one co-angler
leader. I was about to say, didn't he have the day one lead?
Yeah, he caught a 6, a 5, and a 4. And I have like 16 pounds, and I'm like,
can you give me one?
I'm like, hey, man, like, you mind if I make a drift? Like, I'm not asking you not to fish, but you mind if I get like a couple hundred yards on this one? He's like, dude, I could call that 4. And I was like, you are going to be the day one leader. I promise you. You got eight in the back.
Do you remember who it was?
Look up the day one leader. Well, I don't know if we can look it up that way. I can't remember his name. I blocked it out of my brain because he was a super nice guy. He wasn't, but he was very serious. He was very serious.
What event was it?
It was the open last year on St. Lawrence River, day one.
What was his weight? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I don't remember if he had that many big ones. I might have exaggerated a little bit, but he was the day one leader for sure. He had, I want to say he had 14. 3 for 14?
Yeah. That's pretty stout.
It was, yeah, he caught him. But he was like, no, he's like, I need to get rid of this 4-pounder. And I'm like, again, that's probably like, you know, in St. Lawrence mentality is like, you can't have 4-pounders and win.
Yeah. That's just about any Great Lake smallmouth fishing. It's like, 4-pounders are rats. We're like, another 4-pounder.
I was trying to get another 4-pounder. I was like, man, come on.
You know where he ended up, like in that?
He got ish. He had ish the next day, and ish was throwing top water. And so I don't even think he had a limit. I'm not sure. Because I saw him at the weigh, and I was like, well, you going to win or what? And he's like, no, man, I didn't get him today. Ish took him shallow, and he was hoping for another drifter. My day two co-angler caught his PB smallmouth.
Hey. Man, you were on him.
No, I've told Wyatt this story 100 times. I had 25 to 26 pounds of smallmouth a day out of my boat. Unfortunately, the big ones were on the coast side because I'm drifting backwards because I'm not good enough to drift forwards. And I didn't have the brakes. Yeah. You gotta put those brakes on there.
Yeah, it's tough. When you go like when you're used to fishing reservoirs and like still bodies of water, and then you have to go fish that current or big waves. It's a huge transition.
Yeah, definitely.
Finding them never seems to be like the hardest part, getting them and presenting it properly and putting your bait right where it needs to be. The co-angler has complete advantage because they throw their line out there and like, oh, and they just need 3 bites. So, and they usually get them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm so intrigued, but I'm looking for this name.
Yeah, I don't know anyone with NRXs and Stella's. Stella's, like,
I'll never forget this man. I want to say he's...
Was he an older guy or...
Yeah, I think he was in his 50s, and I think he was a chiropractor.
Yeah. Well, that's where the money comes from for those.
Yeah.
$500 setups.
Well, I'm a big fan of Loomis. I have Loomis stuff, but that was, again, tackle shop ownership days. You know, I was, you know, getting stuff at dealer cost and buddy deals from reps and whatnot. That's the only reason I have that collection. But otherwise, I couldn't afford to pay retail for them. So, Loomis, if you're watching,
reach out to the juice.
Yeah. So, how do you guys drift? Is there a way to drift forward? Is that even a thing?
You can. Really. It's just more motor, maneuver, but
a lot more work than it's worth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to fish from the front, just go to the lake. It's about as best as you can do.
Or point your nose straight in the current and just slowly tap the trolling motor to kind of keep your bow forward. That's about all you can do.
Hey, on that new Ultrex now, just put that baby in drift mode and you go stand the back with him.
Oh, dude.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
There you go. Andy, you got anything else for these boys before we start wrapping this sucker up?
Nah, man, go ahead.
All right, boys. Well, so first time on the show, we like to end the show with this question. So we'll kick it off to both of you. We'll go Shane, then Wyatt. But first time on the show, we like to ask you guys if you could pick three different individuals. They don't have to be fishing. They could be alive 1,000 years ago or alive today that you could sit down, have a steak and a beer, and pick their brain. What three people would y'all invite?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I was that not prepared tough. For... Is this what you do to all your first-time guests? You just try to throw a monkey wrench at their brain? I feel like this is a test, too.
Yeah. They don't have to be fishing industry.
It could be anybody. It could be anybody.
I know. That's why I'm like way off at a...
We've had anywhere from current presidents to Pocahontas to anything. Oh, whatever.
Fictional characters?
There's a knock on my door, so Andy, take over.
Man, Wyatt, if you got answers, feel free to take over and help me not look like a complete idiot because I'm drawing a total blank right now. I'm very interested.
I could be like a sports hero. You could go like philosophical.
Okay. Michael Jordan. Big Michael Jordan fan. I don't even like watching basketball, but Michael Jordan would be one. You know, I'm going to go Aaron Martins. I wish I would have got the opportunity to speak with him. I met him one time, but obviously not like sit down and have a steak and beer. I don't have a third.
You gotta have a third, bro.
You gotta find a third. You got two. You're two thirds of the way there. Come on, man.
Oh,
geez. Is there anyone that you would like to talk to again? It may be like
Theo Vaughn.
More information.
Theo Vaughn.
Theo Vaughn.
That's a very interesting dynamic you got going on there.
Theo Vaughn.
I like that.
Those are my three.
I like that. See, I was going to say Michael, too. Let's see.
Hey, can't use this the same so, three.
Steak and a beer, right? Okay. So we can't do Jesus, I guess.
I mean, you could. You could substitute beer with wine, right?
We could do wine, yeah. Well, then I would choose him for sure.
And they probably drank mead back or some type of drink like a mead back then, I would assume.
I would 100% Jesus for sure is one of my guys then. Probably Donald Trump. Jesus, Donald Trump. That's pretty good. One more, man. And Jordan Lee. There you go. That's my three.
It's very interesting table. <That's
right. laughs> Yeah, I feel like this was a test and we just completely failed and we're never getting invited back on the show.
Listen, Jesus, Donald Trump, and Jordan Lee. You could write a country song to that right there.
Yeah, it does sound like a country song. The next Riley Green album that's going to drop. Okay. That's awesome. Well, boys, before we let you go, is there anything the people need to know coming up for you guys, either individually or on the podcast or anything like that?
Man, we just got tournaments. That's it. I mean, we've got a boat to compete for at the end of the year that we're in the lead for right now in the Angler of the Year race. And it's not a little boat that, like, me and Shane have won a boat before, and it ain't one of them. It's a nice one. It's a premium Bass Cat. It's going to, like, valued at, like, 90 grand. So that would be awesome. And a few more tournaments other than that. And then we got the Bass Nation National Championship in November on Grand Lake to compete for a classic spot. That will be one me and Shane are really excited to compete in. And, yeah.
Gloves are off, Wyatt. We're competitors in that one.
Well, if you get just let me get first, second, or third. You know, whichever one. It doesn't matter.
Sure, to me. Sure.
As long as they get together classic. And I think that's it, man. Just keep up with us on the juice, and that's it. I ain't got nothing else.
So if you guys win the boat, is it you're going to sell it and split it, or are you rock, paper, scissor into who's going to get the boat?
Nah, we sell it. So
cash money.
Yes, sir. Try to sell it on the spot, probably.
Yeah, we're trying not to pay taxes and pull that sucker home. Hopefully we sign off somewhere. Here you go.
Yep. What about you, Shane?
Man, yeah, just tournaments. Just kind of want to lean in on this and hopefully do more collabs with you guys and anybody else, and just try to that was the whole goal, you know, going into this year, was try to lean into the platforms a little more, because I'm terrible at it, but it's necessary. I'm having fun enjoying it, and hopefully get back to the opens road or something like that next year. So we'll see. Yeah.
Is that the goal then? Make the elites?
I really want to fish the classic. That's my main goal. Like that I can hang my hat on and be like, all right, I went to a classic. The elites would be awesome, don't get me wrong, but you know, I'm older with kids, older than Wyatt. I got two little ones at home. I'm not sure how long I want to pursue the pro game, but it would be nice to say I did it. So
yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's both of our goals, is to get to the opens. You know, who knows what's going to happen in the future with that? Rumors. We don't know if there's going to be a format change. We don't know if there'll be a format change or something like that. But nonetheless, that's what I think we both got our eyes set on, to get to the EQs. So hopefully that'll happen. And for me, I think the elites would be, I mean, that'd be amazing. But for a guy like me, I would have to have pretty much all the support in the world. So that's part of the, you know, doing the podcast and social media, like we talked about earlier in this live stream. So who knows? Maybe one day.
I heard if you make it, Shane's going to pay your way.
Oh yeah. Shane will be my sponsor. Tyler.
Yeah. I'll support you.
It's always good to have good friends.
High five.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, boys, thank you guys so much for taking the time out to be on the show. And obviously we're big fans of y'all and keep up what you guys are doing. If anybody, for whatever reason, is not either following you on social or following the juice, I link the stuff to your socials down below, as well as links to the show. Appreciate that. Make sure you guys do that. Highly, highly recommend. But we need to make this a thing moving forward.
Yeah, man.
You guys back on the show.
Anytime. We'll try not to go way off base.
Maybe one day.
We like that.
Maybe one day we can get into like some fishing stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like diving a little more.
Nobody wants to hear that on fishing shows anymore.
More like fishing stuff. You know what I'm saying?
we really appreciate you guys. And likewise, we're fans of yours. Enjoy it. Absolutely. So keep up the good work. We're just trying to follow. Follow the lead of the hardworking crew over there you guys got. So,
Well, appreciate that. And maybe we'll have to do something around Classic at Ray Roberts next year. We've been talking with our fantasy fishing crew about potentially trying to rent out a little bar space and everything and do a little in-person fantasy fishing show.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Maybe we can get you guys in on that for next season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Hopefully we're fishing that Joker. That's the goal.
Yeah, that would be even better. Now we can have a little insider info. We'll have a classic competitor.
That's right. Well, we appreciate it, dude. Thanks for all the kind words, and thanks for your time, man, for sure, both of y'all.
Absolutely. Heck yeah, boys. Well, We're gonna let you go here, but appreciate it. We'll be talking to you guys real soon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Andy, that was awesome.
It was absolutely.
Been following along with the Juice for a little while now. Picked up on them probably about, it was like 7 or 8 months ago. I had a few people actually send me the show, and it's again, encourage people that are listening or watching this. Like we were talking about early in the show, this is not competition. This is collaboration. And it's, you know, a network of people that are in this for the same game that we love talking about it. We love breaking down, you know, guests and topics and things that are going on in fishing. And we're all in this thing together. So it's cool to kind of get shows together. You know, what we've done in the past with Rudd and Andrew Hayes, and we've had Pangrack on shows multiple times. So it's cool to see all of it come full circle and to get to meet these guys, spend some time with them, but hopefully spend some time in person this year. I mean, I'd love to freaking get down to Texas. I know we'll obviously be in March, but definitely need to be making this stuff happen. But some great team tournament conversation. We didn't get to all of it, so we're going to have a part two.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we got stuck on tangents, which seems to always happen in our shows. So
that's the foundation of this show. If it wasn't for
serious
tangents, no one
tangent would. Anglers. There we go.
I mean, there's a reason we get guests on, because you and I have nothing to teach when it comes to fishing.
That's facts. Especially smallmouth. Apparently, I don't know how to catch them anymore after like 2 hours on the water. So
they just got smart. They're just like, yep, we know.
There was like, where we went, there was like 60 boats out in every spot. You're just watching boats rotate, and I'm like, man, this is gonna suck. And oh boy. We at 3 o'clock, we're like, oh, let's go. We ran over to the boat ramp and had pizza, and as guys are getting off the water, like, how'd you do? Like, oh, we didn't catch anything. And I'm like, what?
Oh, jeez.
I was like, oh, this is bad. And then
no bueno.
When we put the boat in, guys are getting off, like, yeah, first hour was great, and we haven't caught a fish since like 7 o'clock, and I'm like, ooh, this could be fun. And then my second cast, I caught like a 3-pounder. I'm like, what are these guys talking about? And then it was done. Like
just 10 does.
Fish later. I'm like, oh god.
Yeah.
Brutal. Yeah.
Brutal.
Here I am complaining about 10 fish and people would die to catch 10 fish in a day.
Yeah. So die to fish.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Jerk. Well, Andy, that was a fun freaking show with those guys. Definitely love to get them on more. But
absolutely.
Like we mentioned earlier, check out the new power stations from XT Power. If you guys are campers, truck campers, travel a lot, you need some portable power, you know, wherever you are, those things are the deal. Check those out. And then as well as take advantage of some of the new stuff with Omnia Fishing, guys. They're running sales constantly. Now is the time to be an Omnia premium member. With the amount of savings, 20% of your orders going back to you. Definitely take advantage of that. We'll always have links down below to different baits, things like that you guys can take advantage of, save some money on. But all in all, Andy, great show, great people, and looking forward to the St. John's River event.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll be able to watch a little bit of it, so we'll see.
That's right. Well, folks, appreciate y'all as always. This is going to be the one show for this week. Usually we have like a part two. We just got a part one for this week, being that we have fantasy last night and it's been just hectic. We couldn't really line up a whole part two. But nonetheless, hope you guys enjoyed this show, and we'll see you next week. Well, that was an awesome show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you can and your app allows it, please leave us a rating and review. It really helps us get seen more, which allows us to access more time and more variables to be able to bring to the show to make it better for you guys. So hope you enjoyed it. And if you did and you liked some of the things we talked about in this episode and want to check out our show partners, all of that is in every single show description. You can click down there. It's got all of our discount codes, all of our links to our show partners, where you guys can go and support the people that support this show and help us make this show happen. And of course, this show does not happen without you guys. You guys know we appreciate you. You're the Searsanga fam. You're the reason we're here. Appreciate y'all, and we'll see y'all on the next one.